just want to talk about this thing that's in my brain. It keeps me from wanting to come on, but I want some gain. Maybe a little rain.
Ready, ready to go? Everybody, welcome back to the We the Patriots podcast. I am your host, Sal Asante, and with me today is a very special guest from halfway across the world, really. I mean, the total other side of the world, Nobby Kleinman. How are you doing today, Nobby?
Sal, I am great. I'm pleased to be here with you. Thanks for the invitation.
I am pleased to have you. No, I mean, thank you for wanting to come and kind of espouse your ideas. I think that what you've done is kind of, it's pretty interesting to me, but I think interesting to most of the world if they got to hear it. So hopefully we can do some of that today.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
So Nobby, tell me a little bit about yourself. You have a history and a half. Where do you come from? You come from Australia?
Yes, I do.
Born and raised. Wow.
Born in a town called Adelaide, which is South Australia. My parents came from Germany originally. We went back to Germany for a year. And then instead of going back to South Australia, we came to Victoria. And so living in Melbourne, and I've lived in Sydney and traveled around most of Australia. It's, you know, a lot of country to see.
When did you go to Germany? That's pretty interesting.
I was aged 14, didn't want to go because I'd watched all the combat movies.
Right.
We were at war with Germany, and of course I didn't realize at that age that that was a long time before. But yes, that was 1967. 66, 67. Yeah. So for 1 year, had to learn German. Well, didn't have to learn. I had to learn German, I guess. My parents were German, spoke German at home, and went to school over there. And I used to help teach English after school to some of the local girls.
That's pretty awesome. So you were 14 over there. I'm sure that it was probably pretty interesting. You got to see some, I'm sure, gorgeous German women. And so,
lovely.
So when you traveled back to Australia, was it going back to the same area or was it a whole new area once you got back there?
Yeah, no, totally new town, city. Melbourne is the second largest city in Australia. And so moving back here was a totally new experience. Nobody we knew here. Starting all over again. So it was hard for my parents.
And how hard was it for you? Was that, I think around in Australia, you're 16 years old at that time, I assume, 15, 16 years old. Are you still in school?
Yeah, 15. Yeah, still in school. So a new school, new people. Had to try and fit in. Couple of guys didn't have a problem with. Couple of guys I did have a problem with.
The
school bully type thing, you know.
It
happens.
Of course. Yeah. So you get into your school, and did you go to college for finance?
No, not at all. In fact, I left school and worked for a department store.
Interesting. Okay.
In the menswear department. So I had a bit of, checkered career, menswear. I've been into the building and construction industry. I've done carpentry and woodworking. I was a plumber for a number of years, worked in offices for another couple of years. I was out on the road selling automotive spare parts for a few years. Selling agricultural tractors, ride-on mowers, chainsaws, brush cutters for a few more years. And then from there, I eventually ended up going into finance.
So you started your business. Was there any, did you have any partners? Was there any reasoning behind it? What was the start of your original idea?
I'd become a little bit adventurous when I was working for the company that was selling ride-on mowers and everything.
Interesting. Okay.
There was a big market for ride-on mowers in Australia, and so I designed my own drive system, which had no gearbox or anything like that, just worked off levers and it'd spin around and everything like that. They're much more common nowadays, but so I was building my own, and the company found out that that was happening, and I got fired. So I was unemployed, and somebody said to me, "Oh, look, you're a salesman. You do well in insurance. Go around the corner. They're having a meeting there tonight." And so I did. I heard what they had to say, loved what they said. I thought, I can do this. So I joined the insurance industry, and that's what it was
Okay.
called back then.
Okay. That was all financial services was the insurance industry.
Yeah, it wasn't
Interesting.
financial services. It was the insurance industry. We were as popular as used car salesmen.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine. That just sounds disappointing. So you, but it seems you grew this business to be pretty successful for yourself, though. How long did it take to build up to that massive clientele? I think you mentioned about 4,000 clients at one point. How long did it take to build up that many clients that were recurring in your business?
You know, the first, I suppose, 3 or 4 years was probably the hardest,
Sure.
because one of the things that we used to suffer with all the time was what was called clawback. So if a client, you know, cancelled their policy, any commissions that we'd received were taken back. So it
Right.
could be pretty hurtful at times. But after I got past the first 3 or 4 years and set my mind at exactly what I wanted to do, and I knew where I was going, it was just an upward trajectory. What had actually
Right.
happened, I think the kicker for my success was that I became very good. I was very good in risk insurance, which was life insurance and income protection. But the real kicker came along when the government mandated retirement. We call it superannuation. You
Okay.
guys have, what are they called, RIAs?
You
So
have
retirement security plans.
multiple vehicles for retirement in the US. It all depends a lot on what your occupation is. Depends on if you have access to special tiered advancement programs or just stock regular like IRA programs. Yep, so you have IRA, you have 401k, you have 403b maybe. You have a whole bunch that are like teacher and union worker and stuff like that. Pension programs as well. It's pretty expensive.
I wasn't aware that it was so diversified. How confusing would that be? However, I suppose the bottom line is it's retirement planning.
Right.
And we when it was mandated for employers to pay a percentage towards an employee's retirement scheme, that was where I jumped in. And it started off at 3% of an employee's salary. So, you know,
Okay.
somebody on a certain percentage, they get 3%. And so everybody was getting this money put in by employers, or was supposed to be. And they had to be signed up. So I was going around to all my old clients, especially those that I've been in with the automotive industry or the agricultural side of it. And
Sure.
they knew me already. So I just started signing them up and their employees. And as well as looking after their retirement security needs, I was also looking after their personal insurance needs. And
Right.
then we looked after their general insurance needs as well. So that really started getting the ball rolling, and you know, I was on the upward swing with that.
So now I'm you piqued my interest now with the securities that you were selling. Was the retirement funds you were selling, was it just a conglomerate package or a pension program, or was it based on stocks? What exactly was that package?
Okay, so it wasn't pension programs at that time, because what we call pension programs is more your retirement, once you've moved into the retirement side of things.
Got you.
But from the investment side of things, we would base it on the risk profile of the person involved, the client involved. So
Got it.
somebody who was quite young, obviously many years available to be able to accept risk, going up and down over the future. Whereas somebody who was closer to retirement age, back then we weren't putting them into anything that was as risky. So it'd be more like mutual funds and those sorts of things.
Right. No, well, that sounds like you definitely have your head where a lot of the financial planners are nowadays, or the financial gurus, or at least the ones that kind of care. You, of course, you have the Bitcoin traders that want you to throw their money into everything, but generally speaking, financial advice kind of falls along the lines of exactly what you said there. So
Yeah.
I'm really curious, of course, how did your business start to erode? Was there one sudden moment, or was it a buildup of things that kind of took you out of business?
You know, I loved what I was doing. people would look at me on a Friday night and they'd say, well, what's the matter with you? And I would say, oh, I've got nobody to talk to tomorrow. And Monday, I'd be rubbing my hands with glee. I'm going to work. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to help them with their future. I was really excited about helping people. I loved what I did. But what started happening was you had self-interest groups. Like, I think you've got Choice over there, Choice Magazine. Do you have them over there?
Yeah, sure.
Yep. So we have Choice here. The governments, you know, whenever a government changes, they have their own agendas. And Choice and some of the personal interest groups started saying, these financial advisors are making too much money. And we were doing well. Mind you, we were working for it as well. And we had to go through certain education and meet the education criteria to be able to remain in the industry, which was fine. Eventually the government started coming in with, oh, well, you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't do that. And I thought, do you know what? This means I'm not able to speak to my clients in simple English and explain why they need to have insurance, why they need to have a retirement plan, why they need to have an income protection policy. So I couldn't talk to them just like a conversation that you and I are having now. I had to put everything in writing, and therefore it was, they'll love to talk to you, but I can't do it. Want to make an appointment? Come to my office. We'll do it all across the desk, you know.
Really?
And and that, for me, that just wasn't fun.
No, so they would stop you from actually having a conversation about what was written down in the executed documents?
No, you could talk about what was in a written document because we had to provide a written document. And quite often it was called a statement of advice. So if you and I had a conversation and I made recommendations to you based on what I felt was appropriate for you, I would come out with what was called a statement of advice, which was about 80 pages long, and nobody would ever read. And the client felt comfortable with me and said, you know what, Nobby, just where do I sign? That's all they wanted to know. And this was just getting ridiculous. We were having to pump out so much paperwork. There's nothing wrong with being legally correct and crossing the T's and dotting the I's, but the hoops they were making us jump through was just getting worse and worse. We were having to incur higher costs because everything that was going on, we had to put on more staff. Our insurance costs for liability were going up and up and up because you had smart lawyers who came in and said, you made this recommendation to this client based on this information. Where's the proof to show, you know? And so you were getting advisors who were being sued and having their lives ripped apart because some smart lawyer or a group like Choice, you know, had a personal agenda to start ripping into advisors, all for no good reason. Because advisors at heart do care about their clients, the good ones. You know, you're
the
always
good
ones
do, of course.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I said, you know what, this is not fun anymore. I'm out.
Right. Yeah. I definitely don't blame you. And at least it was a decision you were able to make under your own power. You didn't get forced out. So you spent some time away. What did you do and what did you gain out of that experience of being away from that daily grind of probably, I'm sure, 80 to 100 hour weeks meeting clients constantly and putting together documents, like you said?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, you'd be working Saturdays and Sundays sometimes trying to keep up with it all. And not that I minded too much. I had made a conscious decision that I wouldn't go to the office, which was only 1 kilometre or half a mile away from my home. I made the conscious decision that weekends were my time with my family, and so therefore we wouldn't do that. That was only my partner and myself. But after I'd sold the business, we ended up travelling overseas to a couple of places, Asia and Europe. And I'd bought a four-wheel drive before we went off overseas. I took that off to one of our four-wheel drive companies here, and I said, take this and trick it up with all of this stuff. So that was an extra $35,000 worth of car on top of the $80,000 it cost.
Nice.
Wonderful. And then we came back from overseas. We went off on our four-wheel drive trip, right up the east coast of Australia, right to the very tip, which is one of the glory trips that everybody has planned for a four-wheel drive. And just so much of the country to see. We loved it. We were away for 7 weeks at the time.
That's beautiful.
And we did that. We came back and we realized, well, putting up a tent all the time was not the greatest thing because you might be there one night or a week. So we ended up buying a small off-road caravan and just hitched that up, and then we'd take off wherever we wanted, and it was brilliant.
Very nice. And how long did you end up doing that type of living before you felt like you needed to come back to working in some sense?
Well, it was probably the 2 years. We'd also taken the time to renovate the house, landscaping outside. We rendered the whole outside and fixed up the garden and plants and lawns and everything. So I had a really fun time for that couple of years. Spent a lot of money, but we got the house looking the way that we wanted, got it all finished. And I was standing outside and just surveying everything, looking at it and feeling really pleased with myself and thinking, life is so good. And all of a sudden, it was like somebody hit me in the back of the head, or a switch went off in my head, and it said, "You're bored. You'll want to get back into helping people with managing money. Now go and do something." It was
Now,
literally like that.
that epiphany comes along, but I'm sure it came with a caveat that you don't want to do what you were doing.
Yeah, look, it was. I didn't want to go back and do it with financial institutions or banks or anything like that, insurance companies. When you're under their rule, and it's fine, you've got to play by their rules because they're also at risk and they can't afford that risk. So I don't have a problem with any of that. But it also restricts you from being able to say what you want to say freely, which is the reason I left in the first place. And so therefore, I thought, okay, I'm going to find something I can do to help the people that I was always being asked one question. And that one question was mainly coming from women when they were my clients. And they would say to me, "I don't want to know about financial planning, insurance, or investment. I just want to know, how do I manage my daily money?" So the problem they had was they were running out of money before running out of month. And nothing really has changed. I mean, we're living through the same thing today, the same as they were 20 years ago and 50 years ago. The cost of living was going up, up, and up, but wages were remaining stagnant. And so, therefore, the women were stuck at home being asked to do more with less. And when you get into that sort of situation, the husband comes home and he says, "Look, I give you my pay packet. You've got all my money, but I'm seeing less and less here." And unfortunately, money is the cause of 50% of divorces. And rather than working it out,
Absolutely.
people end up going their separate ways. So money is a big thing. And I thought, okay, they ask for help with managing money. Let me see what I can find.
Now, your approach to helping them out and developing this, did you have to make sure that you were avoiding anything that can get you in trouble with the government? Is there anything that you do currently that's questionable as it is as an advisor?
Absolutely nothing.
Good.
Firstly, in Australia, you're not allowed to say that you're a financial advisor if you are not on the financial advisor register. And I'm not an advisor. Thank goodness I'm not an advisor because I can say anything I like. I'm just a Johnny Ordinary citizen. I just happen to have experience and qualifications behind me that give me the qualifications, if you like, to be able to talk about what I do. And in doing that, it became that the thing that I used to say to people was, "Look, managing your money isn't hard." And this is while I was an advisor. Spend less than you earn and pay the highest interest debt first. And that's been the standard response that anybody gives out, because if you start going beyond that, you're actually starting to give advice. People would look at me and they said, "No, there's got to be more. I'm waiting for more. There's something you're not telling me. There's some financial advisor stuff you're not sharing with us. So no, that's it. Spend less than you earn, and you know, live within your means. And they couldn't understand it. They understood what I told them, but they didn't know how to do it. And it was then that I realized that what they actually needed was a push-button solution. Because when you told them to use a budget, budgets are boring. Budgets have no outcome. They have no result. And if we did that sort of thing, people who go to use a budget already know they're in trouble. There's those who know they're in trouble, and that's why they start doing a budget, and they realize, no, I don't want to know, and I'm going to put my head in the sand and hope it'll all go away.
Right.
And the other people say, I use a budget religiously, and it works well for me. And budgets do work. People don't. So that's where the problem was. So it became, how do you get somebody involved in managing their money in something that's not so boring? Because quite often, if you know, I had one woman who said to me, if that's all that's left, I'm not giving up my glass of wine on a Friday night. You know, I'm not going to give up that pair of shoes. I'm not going to give up that dress. Their priorities were more important than getting themselves sorted financially.
Right. So, and I see a book behind you. I just have to ask about, I see a book called Spend and Grow Rich.
Yep.
Is that your book?
Yes.
So did you play that book off of Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich?
Yes and no. The information inside is totally around money or finances and ideas, but the title, obviously, and there's plenty of them out there, all revolve around the same sort of thing. Think and grow rich, spend and grow rich. It's just how you approach them, but yeah.
Gotcha. That Think and Grow Rich is one of the best early reads that I did, because it's just to open up your mind to different ways of thinking. But that's definitely going to have to be one of my reads. I got to pick that up.
Not a problem. You know, and this is the thing. It's exactly what you're saying. You've got to open your mind up to different ways. If you stay with the old ways, and they haven't worked for the majority of people, it's like Pareto's law. 20% of people work, 80% of people don't, or 20% of ideas work and 80% don't, or you know, whatever it is. It's the old 80-20 rule. And then you go another 80-20 within that 20. So you just keep drilling down. And what you end up with is, to a degree, you end up with 85% of the population are basically broke, 4% are comfortable, and 1% are rich.
Right, right. And now...
So what are they doing that the other 85% are not doing?
So I have a question for you, being the fact that you spent so much time around finances and managing money or seeing money from different angles. Do you believe that if everybody got to, or not everybody, will say 75% of the population got to a standpoint of being able to manage their money to a point of not outflowing more than they inflow, so we're not causing debt with 75% of the population, do you think we'd see a significant difference in the large scale economic, I guess, outlook?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the 75%, as much as that would be fantastic, the reality is you've got your lower, call it socioeconomic group, your middle class group, and your top group. It also comes down to mindset. And if you're stuck in this lower group, that's where you've got this ceiling that you think you can never pass. And the reality is it's because you've never tested it.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. But my question's more so, even if we got to a 75%, if that was possible, right?
Yeah.
What kind of change, from your point of view, what kind of change do you think could be seen if your ideas and many others were actually adopted by that many?
You would find a total shift in people's minds and lifestyle.
Okay.
That's my belief, because people believe that they need to have more money. The reality is they don't need to have more money. They need to use the money they have more wisely.
Sure. Sure. I couldn't agree more with that point.
So in doing that, if you can show them how to be more efficient with the money they already have, that will totally change their mindset as well. And so therefore you can say to them, you don't need to go out and earn more money. You don't need to go and get a second or third job. You don't have to refinance, remortgage, beg, borrow, or steal, eat, you know, baked beans or potato chips for the next 10 years, or even move back in with your parents. On the income that you've got now, you can start to plan a life going forward, but you've got to be proactive in planning.
Right. And so when you started developing this plan in your head, did you first come out with a book or did you come out with a strategy first?
Yeah, no, I had the program done in my head.
I'm sure it was in your head for years.
Well, yeah, look, you know, when I was when I started thinking, okay, I want to help people with managing their money, but how do I do it? And I went out and I looked at different programs that are available. Most of them were budgets. And I knew that budgets hadn't worked. There was another company in Western Australia that had come out with a program that I'd been introduced to. And I thought, yep, what they're telling me is exactly what I want. So I'll buy into that now. And that was at the beginning when I just sold my practice. And then I took my 2 years off. And then after 2 years, I came back to have a look at what they were doing. And I found out that all they were doing was just refinancing people's debts, getting them to send their paperwork to them. They would organize it. They'd tell them how much they could spend and things like that. And I thought, this doesn't seem to be working. And one of the guys who introduced me to it said, yeah, look, it's a bit of a hard slog. You can't get people to pay their money. They can't get refinanced because they're bad debt. They don't send their paperwork in to get everything done. And it's really hard. Right, forget it. So I looked at buying the company so I could reorganize it and get it streamlined. And they said, no. I said, okay, fine. So I walked away from that. And I came back and, you know, I'd be washing the car and I'd be thinking and I'd be cutting the grass and I'd be thinking, I'd be going for a walk and I'd be thinking. Right. The thinking was, how can I show people how to manage their money, eliminate their debt in less time and create their future wealth just on their current income? And I kept thinking and thinking, and it came to me one morning in the shower. It was like the epiphany. And I jumped out of the shower and I sat down and for the next 2 weeks, I just wrote everything out, put it into an Excel spreadsheet, the whole thing, and sent it off overseas to get built. And it took about just over three months. And when it came back, it was pretty good. I was quite happy with it. In fact, it hasn't changed a lot since then. There's been some minor improvements, but it hasn't changed a lot since then.
Really? Okay. So you developed that program. How long until you decide to write a book about it or write your book, Money Rules?
Right. So that was probably about 3 years later.
Okay.
Because I was at an event in Thailand and there was a guy I was sitting next to who was a presenter, but he had a system for writing books and getting it out into the public. And it was $25,000. And he said to me, you're nothing if you don't have a book. You can have the best program in the world, but if you haven't got a book in your hand to give out to people, you're not considered to be an authority. So I said, oh, I don't care. I don't know what to write about. Anyway, I ended up writing the book, which is that one there. Want More Money, Honey? And so I wrote that and we put it out there. And it didn't really go anywhere. I tried doing the best I could at the time, but I'm not a promotions guy like that. I'm probably one of these guys who has all these great ideas, puts them in place, and then goes on to the next thing instead of, you know, concentrating on doing what I should be doing. But I've got that book
that's
done.
That's not necessarily true. If you're the one generating the ideas, you got to keep going with it. You can't shut it off.
No, that's true. And look, I still got a passion for it. I'm still excited every day by what the program does. And right now I'm back in the mode of promotion. So I'm off to Sydney in a couple of weeks' time to do an event up there, but looking to start heavily promoting again now, especially with everything that's going on.
Very nice. And so now, I guess a totally different question, but have you ever made it over to the States? Have you ever visited over here?
About six times, mostly
Okay.
San Diego.
San Diego, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be the closest over there in California for you. Now, did you get to venture anywhere towards the middle of the country, or where's the farthest you went?
The furthest I went was Arizona, which is
Okay.
only next door, obviously.
That's probably like a state over. Yeah.
I can't think of the other one, which is also just north of Arizona from memory. It starts with an O, does it start? I can't remember.
So you might have went to New Mexico or Utah.
Utah.
Yep.
Utah.
Yep, definitely. So you saw some good looking country. How were the views for you? What you got to see?
Cold, very cold. I got there. I got there. I was out in the middle of nowhere. I
Oh
couldn't
yeah.
believe
Okay.
it. And I was just, I think I was it on a train I got off or a plane? I can't remember now. But I got off and there was nobody else there. It was freezing cold. I loved the view of the mountains with the snow on them. Draper, from memory, was the
Okay.
place where I went to. And it was only by sheer luck that a guy came along to pick up his son and he said, "Would you like a lift into town?" And I said, "Thank you." Otherwise, I would have been stuck out there all night.
Wow.
But yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You had a fun trip over to the US. So
Yes.
now with your financial advice that you're trying to give out, I guess I could say, what is your primary route of trying to promote what you do? Is it by speaking at events?
Look, it will be for the beginning. I'll get back into it, but
Okay.
it's going to be predominantly through social media. So there's going to
Okay,
be
cool.
obviously Facebook and LinkedIn. One of the things that I'm going to look to achieve is I can't do this on my own. There's
For
no way
sure.
known. So I'm looking to recruit advisors who've left the industry. In the last couple of years in Australia, we had at 2018, I think it was, we had about 26,000 advisors in Australia. 2 years later, now we've got just under 18,000. And the reason for that was a judicial inquiry which blasted the financial services industry, but came down heavily on advisors, even though it was the banks and the insurance companies who were at fault.
Sounds
So the
about right.
advice that, yeah,
They
so
took the
that,
brunt of the load, yep. They took
yeah,
the hit.
so yeah, the government turned around and said, "Look, if you want to stay in the financial services industry, you're going to have to pass the this exam, which was called FASEA. It was FASEA, and I can't remember what it stands for. But apparently, it was grueling, and had no bearing on what people had been through in the years. So what you had was all of these guys who'd been in the industry for 30, 40, 50 years were leaving now in droves, and all that experience walked out the door. So my thing is, hey, look, all you guys have got this experience. I actually want you to go back to your clients and help them manage their money because they need your help now, and you don't come under any governance from the government or any other sector. You're just helping people managing their money."
That sounds like a great plan. So, do you have plans outside of Australia or trying to keep it local for now?
No, look, I'm going to actively pursue advisors in the US. I'm already speaking with a couple of people over there,
Awesome.
and looking for people in the UK.
For
So it's
sure.
predominantly English speaking at the moment, but I've also been told that I should have it translated for Europe, like Germany and France,
Yeah. Okay.
and even
Okay.
Spanish.
I would say Spanish would definitely be a big one, especially here in the US. Spanish and English, of course, you have those two. Yeah. I
I
mean,
mean,
I couldn't. I couldn't see any language that wouldn't benefit from what you're espousing, right? You're speaking just common sense to me. Your ideas is what I've told my listeners before on financial advice. If you ever need financial advice, it's try not to have debt and pay off whatever you can as quickly as you can with what money you have.
Not
It's
hard, is
that
it?
simple.
And do you know what? I think sometimes it's the simplicity of it that causes people to think, no, it can't be that easy.
I
And
couldn't agree
therefore,
more.
right?
I couldn't agree more.
And that's why I think the program works so well, because they're the ones who are in control of it. They actually get to put the information into it. They get to press the button and they get to see the result. And they say, well, I haven't changed anything else. I haven't increased my income. I haven't had to get a second job or anything, you know. But this is just my income. I can't believe I can do this. And all of a sudden it becomes a reality. And it's like, let's go and do it. And if I can do this,
little motivator.
How can I accelerate it?
Right. And that's the one thing is when you get rolling in finances, nothing wants to stop you. You just want to keep it going.
True. And that's exactly what happened with me, because when I did this originally, it was without a plan. It was while I was still a financial advisor.
Mm-hmm.
I had two cars. I had my office building. I had my home. So I had mortgages and debt and everything like that. And business was starting to come good. And so therefore I would go out and I'd just buy a new car, because it was like, you know, the thing that you did every few years, get a new car. And then it was like, okay, well, I quit smoking. And when I quit smoking, I was saving like, I can't remember what it was. Back then it might have been $40 a week.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. It was like 1999.
That's
so,
really expensive for back then.
Yeah. But, well, yes, back then it was. It was the same. And today is just crazy.
Oh, I couldn't imagine. My mother just quit, but, oh.
Oh, yeah. So the money that I was saving all of a sudden was building up in my account. I said, oh, well, I'll just put that onto that debt, and I'll just, oh, that debt's gone. And then you just do the snowball thing, right? Oh, I got more money, and I'll just pay it off that debt. And so even though I was a financial advisor, it didn't mean I was the smartest, you know, did on the block, but things just started happening, and it was amazing how quickly they happened. And so I was really loving it, and I just started making a plan. I'll have that money next month, and I'll just whack that straight into there. We can go off on a holiday because I don't have any of that debt. The cars are paid off. The only thing I was left with was the office. So that was pretty good.
So now I have a bit of a personal question, I guess. House paid off?
Oh, yeah.
Quickly?
Yeah. What I did was, when I bought the office, they secured the house and the office for the mortgage. And I got it through the insurance company that I was doing the work for, or that I was aligned to. And so I got a pretty good rate at the time. But I got smart. I got the money that they gave me for the office to pay off the mortgage on the home. So
Got you.
Everything was going through the business. So it was all tax deductible.
Amazing.
Which was totally legal. Nothing wrong with that. And so it just helped so much, you know, to be able to do all of that. Of course, on the other end of the scale is I bought my office for $200,000, totally fitted it all out with everything, and sold it. I think 6 years later, oh, 6 years, no, 8 years later for $600,000. So that wasn't too bad.
That's not bad at all.
No, it was quite a boost, you know, selling my business and then selling the office. So it wasn't too bad.
That actually sounds great. Nabi, I don't have too much more to ask you, but I did want to ask if there's anything that you wanted to say out to everybody, please let them know. I've become quite a fan of yours over these past 40 minutes.
Oh, is that long too? Look,
it has been.
the thing that I would say, Sal, is there is hope for everybody. It's just a matter of knuckling down and doing the work that's required. It's all about money in and money out, right? And it comes back to the, it does come back, I hate to use the word budgeting, right? Or what I prefer is managing your money, because what you can't manage what you don't measure, right? So if you if you look after your money, if you know where you're going, if you know where you want to go and how you're going to get there, then putting something in place today is the important thing. I often like to start a conversation with, how did you get here today? Well, I had to come from the office, and I drove down these streets. And so it was a plan. You had a plan in your mind of what you were going to do to get where you wanted to go. Yep. Retirement is exactly the same, and so is money. You can't go anywhere without money, so you need to do your planning. It's right. Not hard, and it can be so exciting. Like we said before, once you're on a roll, it's hard to stop, and you become super focused.
And, yeah, when you go through a debt snowball and you actually nail it, I don't know if there's a more satisfying feeling than that.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. It's brilliant.
Well, Nabi, it was really great having you. I got to say, I would love to have you again sometime. Talk maybe a little bit less about financials and more about just life in general sometime. But
sure.
Otherwise, Nabi, anything I can do to try to advance what you got going on, I would love to help. I am fully supportive of your message. And I'll link everybody, your book will be in the description, all of your books that you wrote, and of course, links to your program as well.
Yeah, look, one of the things that I want to do, I want to help people be able to get control of their money, obviously. And so one of the first things that I do is I let them put all their information into the program, and I'll send them free reports or a free report. They'll see that when they get into the link that you'll give them for the RIA extension. And that will get them on the way. That will show them where they are and where they could be. And it's only the first step. If we go further from there, sky's the limit.
Well, there you go. Everybody, Nabi Kleiman. I've been your host, Sal Sante, and I hope to catch you guys soon. I'ma make all these bitches say, damn, I wish I were the fucking state. I wanna be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream and I'm running. Running away from these demons. But the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.